Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Tiffany Anton, and she's a sex therapist. Tiffany, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Very well.
Good. I just want to say before we start that we will be talking about sex and various things connected with sex, obviously. So if you have any qualms about listening to different things regarding sex, anything like that, please, this may not be the show for you. If there are children around, you may want to get them into the other room. I don't know. It depends on what you feel is appropriate. But just to let you know, we could be talking about a lot of different things that, I don't know, might make some people squeamish. It just depends on how you interpret sex, I guess, and the problems associated with it. So just be advised of that. So with all that being said, right off the bat, I do want to thank you, Tiffany, because Tiffany is going to be one of our speakers at our Holistic Fair, the Festival of Enlightenment. So right off the bat, I want to thank you for doing that for us.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. Well, that should be a great time. Now, as a sex therapist, how do you go about your business? I mean, I know that you've been doing it for how many years now?
11.
11?
Mm-hmm.
It's never a dull moment, right?
No. Well, hopefully even in general therapy it isn't, because you're having a variety of individuals coming in and you're working with them to address their concerns. So a lot of times I will say, I'm a psychotherapist, which is what I am. And my friends will say, oh, tell them what you really do. I said, well, it's a lot more fun to say, I'm a sex therapist.
Yeah, right. That gets some attention, right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So what it is it's really no different than if you were specializing in working with autistic children or in working with grief counseling. And so you have the regular path that you take to become a psychotherapist, like a clinical social worker or a psychologist. And you then take that step into your personalized training. And so for me, I had the experience of doing a multiple rotations with Dr. Damina Renshaw. She's at Loyola University's Sexual Dysfunction Clinic. So in graduate school, I would take a variety of classes of what is affecting couples, sexuality, how to address various intimate concerns, as well as following through with Dr. Damina's program and volunteering with Loyola for 3 years postgraduate, as well as attending a variety of trainings to keep up to date.
Right. So what was it that led you to become a sex therapist? I know there are other things that you counsel people on too, correct?
Yeah, such as generalized anxiety, depression, grief.
But you decided to become a sex therapist. Why?
Why not? It's okay. Enjoyable. Yeah. You know, when I was an undergrad, I knew that I wanted to go into a counseling field, and I particularly liked working with couples and enhancing marriages. A stronger relationship or marriages that we have, the stronger is our parenting. So it really is a trickle-down effect. In undergrad, I knew I wanted to do that type of work, and then everybody kind of enjoys the humor and information from Dr. Ruth.
Right, right.
And so when you think, well, I can take this passion that I have and pair it with Dr. Ruth and actually do it for a living, how fun.
Right. It's a win-win situation, right?
At least for me, yes.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the important thing, you know. But now, a lot of people, when they hear the term sex therapist, you know, they giggle or they, you know, snicker or something like that. They have that childish reaction, you know, something like
assumptions.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they make certain assumptions. Like I said, I would go in and of course, say that I'm a psychotherapist. I wouldn't say up front I'm a sex therapist.
Right.
And so people kind of enjoy that little tidbit.
Right. Yeah. Do you enjoy the reaction you get from people?
Do I enjoy the reaction?
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It is what it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy what I do and helping couples and individuals reach their intimate goals, work through their barriers, create self-acceptance, and really redefining their sexual sense of self. So that to me is exciting. And if someone kind of giggles about it, then, you know, I give them a smirk back. Yeah.
Right. Well, has there been a situation where you've been working with couples that maybe you can't help but, you know, giggle a little bit at what the situation is, or do you treat everything very seriously?
No, the only giggling I do would be, you know, a humorous dialogue that I would have with the client that we're both laughing about, but it wouldn't be one that would be focused on their intimate concern. Because humor, dealing with something so serious, doesn't belong in that moment.
Right. Right. Well, it's very serious to that person at that time as well, and they don't think it's funny, I'm sure.
But we do want to move clients and couples into having fun with sex, using humor, being able to laugh about it.
Right.
Not because I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable, but laughing because this is fun and pleasurable.
Right. Just having a relaxed attitude about it.
Yes.
I know you believe in communication and... Was it compromise?
Oh, I've got a lot of C's. I always say, you know, when people have toast at weddings, I started doing these toasts years ago, like, I don't know, early 90s. And I would say, oh, you know, here is for commitment, compromise, communication, and of course, copulation.
Right.
But I can add all kinds of more C's to that.
Yeah, right. I'm sure you could. Several come to me and I.
No, not inappropriate ones.
That's right.
No,
yes,
no, no. I'm talking about appropriate ones.
Right. All above board and.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, how do you counsel people? I mean, they come to you. Do just single people come to you, or generally do people come in couples? How does that usually work?
If you're in a relationship, a long-term relationship, it is very important to have both parties there. It increases the rate of success. Yes, we have sexual experiences by ourselves, yet we also have sexual experiences with our partner. And bringing that partner in, you get that dualistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're having sex with that person. You need to look at what the two of you can do together to enhance it, to reach not only the individual goal that may have the concern, but what is the couple goal?
Right. Well, I imagine that they want a nice, healthy sex life, because that is important to marriage or any type of committed relationship. You know, I'm sure you counsel all types of couples, whether they be gay, straight, whatever the case may be, right? Yeah, so, I mean, that's very important. And I know there are people that I've known where one partner's changed as they get married for whatever reason. They just decide that maybe sex is not as important or...
Now, hold on. One person changes or changes in their sexual life? Because in all relationships, we evolve.
Right.
And so change is inevitable.
Right. What I should say is they change their perception of what sex means to them, and perhaps it's not as pleasurable, or they never really enjoyed it to begin with, but they've done things to please their partner. Now, in cases like that, how do you try to, I guess, correct the situation to get people on the same wavelength?
Well, one piece of that is education. And so if we think of the role of our neurochemistry plays in our sex life, it's really interesting. So if, just like say today is a regular day, you're going to have a regular level of dopamine, which is that feel-good chemical in our brain that we all need to function and have a decent mood. And you find someone that you're having really lustful, attractive, love-like feelings to, your dopamine is going to jump, double. And so in that dopamine jump, you feel great. You want to be with them. Your pupils even dilate. You think of them often. And our libido does the same thing. So we get a big jump in dopamine. So we're feeling good. We're idealizing the person, thinking about them a lot. And then our libido really does a jump. And so in the first 2 years of a relationship, you know, if you're wanting to go long-term in the relationship, your sex is pretty high.
Right.
Because you got those neurochemical effects. After 2 years, that drops by 50%. And that's the average for all relationships. So let's say that you choose then to get married or, you know, take the next step in buying a house together and it's the third year and you say, why aren't we having sex anymore? So one piece of that is neurochemical. The other piece is we get complacent, bored, monotonous. We have to deal with our life stressors, children. Let's say you've had children, and so your body's changed, your natural sex drive has changed. And so the evolution of couples into changing their sex life from what it was in the beginning is almost a given, but it's how they move forward with it and if it works for both of them. So let's say you have a partner that their libido has really dropped in comparison to where they were not only in the beginning of the relationship, but even 2 years after, and it's uncomfortable for both of them. Then they would come in and we would discuss how they get back on track. And we do that in multiple ways. So like you said earlier, I'm a sex therapist. One part of therapy is sex. And what's the other part? The C words. How are you communicating? What is your commitment to each other? Are you compromising? Are you managing anger? Are you sharing tasks together? Do you feel validated within this relationship? So those are key components that we work on. So let's say they come in just for a libido, an incompatibility in libido. We look at the higher person libido and the lower person libido. The higher one takes a step down, the lower one takes a step up. So they do it in a way that works. And what couples have the exact same libido? Not many, only really in the beginning of our relationship. So you're always going to have the higher and the lower. And so we look at different steps that the couples can take, and it depends on their issue, that gets them on that track.
Mm-hmm. So it just depends on the situation.
Sure.
For each couple.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What is the most common problem that you encounter usually on a daily basis?
Common problem that I would encounter?
Yeah,
or?
Well, I mean, the problems that, you know, people bring to you. Is there one or two problems that, you know, permeate more
than the
others?
Can I give you first statistics and then tell you my experience?
Sure.
All right. If we look at the statistics that were gathered in the last, I believe, 11 to 12 years from the University of Chicago, 43% of healthy women have reported a sexual dysfunction. 43%, and that's of healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And of men, you're looking at 31%. And of those, what are the top in women? Low desire. No desire, low desire. In women, or I'm sorry, in men, it is ejaculating too quickly. Now, underneath that for men is, of course, impotency, as well as low libido or delayed ejaculation. If I can then, move back to women. So number one is the low desire. Commonly under that is lack of orgasm or pleasure,
mm-hmm.
and pain. So those are the most common, you know, they use the word sexual dysfunctions. I like the word, use the word sexual concern. I don't want to make it in a medical scope. It's in a way that sexuality isn't working for you, and let's get you back on track. What do I frequently see in my practice? Well, there's some variety, of course, but most reported is low libido and impotency.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times impotency can either be psychogenic, so it's really kind of based in the head. It's anxieties and stressors. It can be biological, so you're looking at post-prostatectomy, so you're having the prostate cancer surgery, diabetes, having heart disease, you have treatment for your heart disease to keep you healthy, and in the interim, you then no longer have erections. Sometimes there's a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
So those will be the highest amount of cases that I see in frequency.
Mm-hmm. And just briefly, I want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Tiffany Anton, and she is a therapist that specializes in sex. Is that better? Or?
Sounds great.
Okay. Now, when people come to you, are they sometimes embarrassed? Is it hard for them to open up and really explain to you what the problem is?
I think it's difficult for anyone to take that step to go into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult because you think, am I ready? Will I be judged? Will this really work? A taboo within society. And it's a huge strength to do so. Even though therapy isn't a panacea, it really helps.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100%, but it really does help. So if we have high anxiety just coming into therapy in general, let's add that to our sexual concerns. So I'm going to go in and talk to a stranger, even though they're trained, and I'm going to tell them about what's happening in my bedroom, what's happening to
right.
my genitals. It's very brave to take that step. A lot of times clients, by the end of our first hour together, have a huge sense of relief that this is an environment that is safe, comfortable, non-judgmental, and we're really going to get them to the place that they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least to the best of our abilities, of course.
Right. I think that would be very important not to be judgmental, because you have to take a step back, in essence,
mm-hmm.
to just listen to what the situation is and then advance from there.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, do you often suggest perhaps medical treatment? Does that enter into it? I mean, I know there are
It's important to
drugs.
Collaborate with physicians and sometimes psychiatrists just for a continuity of care. So a lot of times urologists, OB-GYNs, oncologists will refer to me, as
mm-hmm.
well as cardiologists.
Mm-hmm.
And, if the client agrees, I'll have them sign a release of information to provide some brief updates to the physician to let them know of their progress or to inquire into if there's any medications that may need to be reevaluated that has still the health benefit to, you know, to improve the client's health, but less of a sexual side effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's many antidepressant medications out there that have a high rate of sexual concerns as side effects. Yet there are a small few, that are alternatives to that, and there's still, you know, typical medications that are out there that highly treat anxiety and depression and have a much lower rate of sexual side effects.
Mm-hmm.
So collaboration with the physicians are important.
Right. And you did say you work with individuals as well, not only couples, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, if an individual came to you and expressed what it is they're bothering them, I guess you have to ask probing questions. Has there ever been a time when people just shut up and they say, oh, that's it, I'm not going to discuss this any further, and you have to elicit some more information from them?
Well, when people come in, I give them a thorough brochure talking about my services as well as boundaries that occur in our office. And so when they sign an agreement for consent of treatment, they understand that we're going to be discussing sexually explicit items,
mm-hmm.
and there's not going to be any inappropriate behavior in our office. So you're coming in knowing that we're going to be discussing sex, understanding what those limitations are within my office, and then a part of my assessment, so when you start therapy, you do a lengthy assessment, which I humorously say it's 50 million questions. I've got to get to know where you are. A general part of that is learning a little bit about family history, substance abuse, relationship issues, and then you get very particular in a sexual assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to ask questions such as, what is a typical sexual encounter for you? What kind of sexual behaviors do you incorporate into your daily or regular love play? What are some of your fantasies? How often are you masturbating? How often are you engaging in sexual activities? How often is that intercourse? And so it is very specific. And I let couples know up front, anything that is too uncomfortable, we will move on.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's something pertinent to your treatment, we will work in assisting your comfort level so that we can get there.
So you try to work with the individual and make them feel as comfortable as possible every mm-hmm. time they come in.
I worked with one couple last year, and she says, you're talking about sex as if you're telling us how to put together our new playset.
Right.
That it's just everyday language that I just kind of put it out there.
Okay.
And for many people, they're not used to talking about their sex life and their feelings and their fantasies and how their body's functioning on such an upfront, relaxed manner.
Mm-hmm. I thought you meant by, you know, saying that how to put a swing set together or something. Part A goes here, part B goes there, that kind of a thing. You break it down in that respect.
Well, but it also would be if you know, if you and I were putting a swing set together, we would be very calm in our interaction. And if we're reading this, we wouldn't think, oh, my goodness, he just said that about the swing set. So that's kind of what she was alluding to. And
mm-hmm.
she and her husband were putting together a swing set for their children. And so that's why it came up.
It was a good metaphor, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, when people talk about different aspects of their sex life, is there anything where it might be taboo or not necessarily, that you are open to everything and anything?
Discussions in the office are never taboo, yet I have treatment limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would refer to a specialist either in this area or even outside of this area to really meet their needs. Two really come up for me on those limitations, and that is an individual that is engaging in pedophilic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many specialists in the area that, you know, would do a much better job,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so appropriately refer them, as well as individuals who have an affinity as well as sexual behavior with animals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Outside of that, mm-hmm. you know, if it's dealing with the intimate realm, something that can be dealt with mm-hmm. in my office, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, considering modern technology, do you get people that come in there that might be addicted to pornography on the computer, anything like that?
Well, we have an increase in sexual concerns linked to the computer, not only about pornography, but also about a sense of what is cheating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the revolution
right.
of social media. You know, if I engage in kind of like a text sex on the phone, if I engage in instant messaging online, is that considered cheating? If I'm watching more pornography than I did, let's say, 20 years ago, is it because you're using it as escapism? Or is it because the availability, you know, is so wide?
Right. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, though, it's a substitute for sex with your partner. Is that a problem with some people?
It can be. My view is most things in life can go to an extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Spending, eating, and, of course, pornography.
Right.
What you look at is this my viewing pornography interfering with my ability to connect to another person, to connect sexually? Is this taking the place of my connection with my partner? Am I so fixated on my fantasy that I am that I'm receiving from the pornography that I'm no longer feeling satisfied with my the sexual experiences that I'm having with my partner?
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at how much is it interfering with your life, your relationships, and your ability to function.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do with a person or couples that come to you? Perhaps there's been some type of traumatic experience, an accident where a person might be quadriplegic, paraplegic. Have you worked with situations like that? Or perhaps they've, I don't know, maybe gone through a fire or something. Maybe they're not attractive to their partner anymore.
Well, there's two pieces to that. One is you say the word trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's one very common trauma that occurs that leads to relationship and sexual concerns is sexual abuse in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that frequently comes up because, unfortunately, even though it might be 20 to 30 years ago, it's still within us and has to be worked through to create a healthy sense of self. So that's one piece of trauma. The other part you're referring to is some physical trauma.
Right.
So if you look at someone that is a paraplegic or a quadriplegic, or has a burn, you look at how do you redefine their sexuality. At one conference that I attended, they showed a video clip of a quadriplegic man in the shower with his wife. And it was one of the most erotic videos that I have seen. One, because that doesn't come to your awareness. You know, that's not mainstream that we think of quadriplegic lovemaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so intimate and intense that this woman really was rubbing her whole body on his face because his face was the only thing left that had sensation.
Right.
And you could see their lustfulness and the arousal that occurred in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's redefining sexuality.
Right. So the sexual act doesn't need to take place per se. I mean, there's other ways to obviously get around it, right? I mean, even though it is a sex act, it doesn't end up in intercourse.
Well, intercourse is only one part of sex.
Right.
I don't even like the word foreplay.
Really?
Because it's like it's before the main event.
Yeah, right.
We're building up to the really big thing of intercourse. And intercourse is one part of our sexual relationship that is wonderful. It is not the only part or the main feature on the stage. So I like to kick out the word foreplay and put the word in of love play.
Mm-hmm.
And love play includes intercourse, oral sex, mutual masturbation, kissing, rubbing, that is all within that pot or basket of love play. The other thing that I tend to do, which is, we would think, opposite of someone that you're seeing as a sex therapist, is when a couple comes into my office, I say I'm kicking out three things. I'm going to kick out erections, intercourse, and orgasm.
You mean those words or discussing
particular areas? Oh, no. I'm saying we're not even going to focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at me and say, you're just telling me you're going to take away my sex life. I'm coming here to make it better. So I said, okay, I'm going to give you a proposal of three other things, and you decide if you want this in your intimate life. And that is desire, pleasure, and satisfaction. I have worked with many young couples, and the males almost always say, can I have all six?
Yeah,
so you've kicked out these three, you're adding these. Of course, uh-huh. I'm going to take the three of the desire, pleasure, and satisfaction that you put in. All six are great. All six are not necessary to experience desire, pleasure, and satisfaction. So if we go back to the scenario we talked about with the quadriplegic and really full body stimulation on the male's face from the female's body, did that person seem to be having desire, pleasure, and satisfaction? Yes. Was that good sex for them? Yes.
Right. It's all the way a person interprets it, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a real tunnel vision of what sex is in our society. And what males typically view as sex is, you know, we got to have that erection. Let's go in for the full intercourse, you know, and let's have the orgasm. And that equals successful sex.
Mm-hmm.
Not always.
Right. Yeah. Again, I know with women, one of the important things is to cuddle, so to speak, after the act. guys don't like to do that sometimes, so I'm sure that might present a problem. Is that something that comes up quite a bit?
Both parties enjoy affectionate touch. Mm-hmm. Both parties. We have a chemical influence when we have an orgasm that leads us to more sleep, that we feel so relaxed. It's one of the best sleep aids ever. Mm-hmm. You know, have good sex either with yourself or your partner, and you can have a good night's sleep.
Very important, yes. Uh-huh. Right.
And so we got a stereotype of the man's going to go to sleep, and the woman's there still talking and wanting to cuddle. Right. We have another stereotype, which unfortunately frequently occurs, is once the male has an orgasm, then sex is over.
Yeah.
Well. Is it over? Have you guys decided that it's over? Because you don't have to have an erect penis to continue right. with love play, to continue with pleasure. So let's balance out the view that both males and females like affection and affectionate touch. We have a chemical response when we have an orgasm that our body's relaxed. So it's naturally we want to be sleepier.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get out of that view of tunnel vision that once the orgasm is complete, then we're done touching.
Yeah,
the couple
right.
decides when they're done, when they're going to roll over or mm-hmm. when they're going to go and, you know, get a glass of water.
Right, or smoke a cigarette.
Yeah,
or get
that's
something
a good one.
Eat,
that's a good one. Smoke a cigarette.
Although that's probably on the downswing now because
yes.
nobody wants to smoke.
But I
or
think
not
we all
people.
Understand that
right.
metaphor. Mm-hmm.
Right. Again, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest is Tiffany Anton. She is a therapist that specializes in sexual relations. And I just want to make a short disclaimer that we are talking about sex and the act of sex. So if that upsets you or might upset other people in the room, please be aware of that. You might want to either leave the room or make other arrangements. Once again, it's going to be rather graphic at times, so I just want to let everybody know that. Okay, what is the good news? I see that you're pointing to something, some paperwork that you brought in. That's okay, you know, I wasn't aware of that, but it has a title on there that says Big News and the Good News. What is the good news?
Well, there's a lot of good news about sex. One is it can save your life. You
really?
Want to get healthier? Let's have some good, healthy sex, okay? And so some statistics I have as to how a good intimate life enhances you. That's what I was kind of showing you there because I
okay.
wanted to make sure that we could address
yeah,
that for
well,
your audience.
Yeah, well, when I said big news, I didn't know exactly. Huh? Never mind. I won't go into it. But anyway, go ahead.
One of the very exciting things, and I think most men will really enjoy this statistic, is if you engage in sexual activity 3 times a week, it lowers your risk of heart attack and stroke by 50%.
All right, now we're talking.
That's right. I told you I had some good news.
That's right.
Okay? And so it's about engaging our bodies. And I have people say, well, does that mean I have to have intercourse or does that mean I have to have a partner? No. What you're looking at is healthy sexual arousal with yourself or with another partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's also good for your prostate to have regular ejaculation.
Mm-hmm.
When you're having good sex, what tends to happen? Our heart rate goes up. We perspirate a little bit.
Right.
We get some good hormones flowing.
Right.
We actually have a hormone called oxytocin that when we experience an orgasm facilitates bonding.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're not so interested in bonding with a partner and not so interested in monogamy, it can sometimes backfire because of a chemical influence when we engage in sex with others. So oxytocin is a bonding chemical. They say that, you know, the more sex that you have, the better your relationship can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a perfect prescription, but we do have neurochemical influences that do facilitate and enhance bonding when you're having a healthy sexual experience.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the good things I want to talk about was reducing stroke and heart attack by 50%. You know, I really want you to talk to your partner, you know, for men to talk to their partners about that to enhance health. I already noted the role of oxytocin in facilitating bonding. Some statistics say that having at least 2 orgasms per week can increase your lifespan. So we don't know if healthier and happier people tend to be more sexually active and that leads to the statistic or not, but to me it's worth looking at. When we're engaged in some good sex, we're burning calories.
Yeah, sexercise, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
We're improving our blood circulation. And not only that, but we're boosting our immunity. Having sex, one to two times per week increases your immunity by 30% due to the release of antibodies called immunoglobulin, mm-hmm. or immunoglobulin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. And I don't know if I need to pronounce it right. Just looking at, you know, having good regular sex is going to help you be healthy overall. Reduces pain. And as we talked about earlier, the perfect prescription for sleep, mm-hmm. it improves sleep, you know, having orgasms.
Right. Mm-hmm. It gets rid of a lot of stress, I would imagine, in other words, right? Sometimes?
It can, but I tell you what, men and women are different. When men are
I've
stressed,
noticed that, yes.
Well, in a lot of ways.
Okay, yes, many ways.
Men and women are different in regards of stress and sex. Men like to have sex when they're stressed out because it really is a stress reliever.
Right.
So let me connect with my partner. Let's experience this sensation. Women, when we're stressed out, we think, I'm going to give a 10-foot pole, and that's as close as you can get to me because this is sensory overload. I've got too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we have different approaches to sex and
right.
within the men and women.
Right. Now, when all these health benefits kick in, would that kick in for a person that wants to pleasure themselves by themselves? I mean, does that same effect come about?
Well, if you're looking at having an orgasm, improving lifespan or lengthening lifespan, sure. If you're looking at reducing heart attack and stroke by 50%, sure.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily with just another person.
Right. You can get a balance of the two. But typical masturbation is, you know, 2 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
And so you're not getting as much of the benefit as the full body experience.
Right.
So you are getting one part of it, but you are missing out on a piece. So trying to get that balance.
Right. So, again, when you're doing it with another person, is that gradual building up to some of the benefits that you are talking about so that your body's going to feel more of those effects as opposed to just
a 2 or 10 minute session? We're moving our body a lot more when we're intimate with another person than we are just through masturbation.
Right.
Just within the movement alone.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that all helps.
Now. And hopefully it's fun and pleasurable.
Right. Well, hopefully. But again, sometimes you said it's painful for people. And I mean, if it's painful, it's not fun. What
right.
do you tell people in that case?
Well, we look at try to determine what is the source of the pain. And that's the important part of collaboration with the physician.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a variety of strategies that you can use with gels and ointments, with dilators, with positions that can help reduce some of that pain. So finding out what the root is, if you can't pinpoint something in particular, or have maybe there needs to be surgery to improve it. Then we look at, on my end, gels, dilators, changing positions, making sure that there's, you know, a lot of lubrication. Real estate agents have the saying of location, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
Sex therapists, we say lubrication, lubrication, lubrication.
Okay.
So it's important in all cases, especially important when you're looking at pain.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's usually what corrects most situations?
Corrects? I don't know if I would say corrects
improves.
Most situations.
Is that a better word, improves or not?
Improves is good.
Okay.
Okay. It can make it feel a little bit more pleasurable on both parties. And it does reduce the chance of pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I would have a couple come in and she's already had the medical exam and has been cleared, and they would talk about pain, and let's say that she would say, well, a typical sexual experience is we're getting ready to go to bed. My husband mounts me and attempts to insert his penis, and it hurts. And by the way, she's, 60 years old, and so she's postmenopausal.
Right.
Well, I hear a handful of things, and one is, where is the full body interaction and stimulation prior to anything going into the vagina? Is she utilizing like a replens or an estrogen cream to help her vagina stay regularly lubricated, as well as there's a real thinning of the vaginal walls with menopause. So reducing the chance of that, because anyone in that situation is going to experience pain having a dry vulva, no stimulation, you know, especially postmenopausal.
Right.
So that is a great example where lubrication and making sure that you have a full body sexual experience, you know, is really going to be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that I've heard when women go through the change, so to speak, their body changes. And I know that I've heard of many cases where all of a sudden women don't seem to be interested in sex anymore or very little.
We have a huge change in hormones. We got to roll with it. We got to figure out where our sexual self remains through the transition. When I talked earlier that of desire, pleasure, and satisfaction, we often link the word desire with lust or horniness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that piece is a real challenge in menopausal and postmenopausal women. Not saying it doesn't exist in cases, but it can be very challenging. And so what we do is we redefine the word desire. We take that lust and horniness that's been placed there, and we look at, do I desire my partner? Do I desire to experience pleasure of my own body and sharing myself with my partner? Do I desire to see a positive look on their face and an experience that we're going to share together? And so in women that are struggling hormonally with a low libido, we would look at redefining desire. We would look at, once they are stimulated, do they notice that they're experiencing feelings of pleasure and satisfaction? Women are often like cars at times on the side of the road,
mm-hmm.
that we've got to kind of get the engine jumped before we're ready to run. And so desire is often a later phase in our sexual experience than up front.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I know when a woman goes through menopause, they're getting older, maybe the gentleman can't really, fully have an erection. But with Viagra and some other drugs, they are able to do so. Sometimes the women don't have that same luxury of having some pill that will make mm-hmm. them do whatever they need to do to be ready for sex. But yet the man is all good to go. I know that's a problem sometimes, isn't it?
Well, you mentioned a couple of things. One is a difference in libido that we talked about earlier, a higher libido person and a lower libido person, and how we work in therapy to get them to a compromise that feels comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're talking about how with the flood of Viagra and Levitra and Cialis is really helping impotent men gain erections. And they would say, there's going to be no need for sex therapists now that we have the little blue pill. Well, the little blue pill, helps open up your vessels so the blood can flow, doesn't improve your relationship, doesn't make you a better lover.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got the pill that then can reduce anxiety for men, that they don't have to worry so much about not having the erection that they want. And it's about communicating with their partner. It's not about pressuring. It's about communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we don't have a magic pill, even though Viagra isn't really a magic pill. It really has been helpful. We don't have something that is in the same vein for women. And so what we look at is, how are we managing our stress? How are we balancing our time? Are we prioritizing our physical intimacy with our partner? Are we looking that sex is an important experience for us? So keeping that mind open, making sure that you're taking care of your body as well as your vulva or your genitals in the menopausal phase, because we talked about the dryness, the thinning of the vaginal walls that are very common, making sure that they're using lubrication, possibly hormones based upon the recommendation of their physician.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's about compromise, relaxation, prioritizing.
Right. But aren't some drug companies working on the female version of Viagra?
Yes, they are. I mean, they've looked at giving prescriptions of Viagra to women. We're not seeing much success in that. They were looking at a medication that was in an antidepressant category that happened to improve libido and interest in women. That hasn't been approved yet by the FDA. They're also looking at gels that you can place on your genitals to possibly increase arousal. Really common gels that you can even get at your drugstore tend to have like a menthol or a heat property to them that has us focus on our genitals. Men, you're out there.
In more ways than one, yes.
You are. You are out there. And in our society, men are much more comfortable in addressing their sexual self and really looking at their penis as a part of their sense of manhood. Well, women, we don't do so well at that. We don't often look at our genitals in a way that this is really a source of pleasure and connection for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So getting that shift in the mindset can be beneficial also.
Right. Again, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Tiffany Anton, and she is a therapist that specializes in sexual relationships. Now, what happens if a couple is so, I don't know, somebody's on one end and the other person's on the other end, in that maybe the man wants something that the woman thinks is dirty or beneath her somehow to do certain things? Is that where the compromise aspect comes in?
Well, you have to look at if it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the most frequent questions asked of sex therapists is, am I normal?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is if it's adult, consensual, respectful to both parties. So you just gave me an example that one party might find it demeaning or uncomfortable. Let's take a situation that is easily encountered. Let's say one party is interested more in an S&M aspect, so maybe some bondage, yet their monogamous partner that they're with is very uncomfortable with that, yet isn't too bad with pornography. You know, they're okay with pornography. So what we would do is we would look at maybe adding pornography to some of their occasional love play and positioning, so that the partner that really wasn't that interested in the S&M aspects, the television wasn't in their main view. But the person that found it very arousing, they had that in their main view, as well as healthy interaction with their partner. So they could get that stimulus that they like to see, maybe with some of the bondage or the submissiveness. Yet it's not interacting with the partner. Or we would look at compromise. So we would ask one partner, would you be comfortable with latex? Would you be comfortable trying being tied down? Would you be comfortable with blindfolding? How do you feel about role playing? So you really break certain things down. So that was just an example of how you might work with one couple where one person is not interested in an S&M type arousal or engaging in that, and another person is.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's working on a compromise where both people feel comfortable enough mm-hmm. to engage in something that is close to what mm-hmm. somebody else's fantasy might be, right?
Well, and then we can take the next step. Let's say that you have a partner that isn't interested in doing any of those things, that latex is uncomfortable, blindfolding is uncomfortable, pornography is uncomfortable. You know, we would encourage the partner that has that kind of arousal program, you know, they can maintain it in their masturbation fantasy life. But how are they going to work to accept that as long as they're with this partner, that is not going to play an active role?
Mm-hmm. Now, when a person has suffered child abuse, how do you work through that to get a person back on track, so to speak?
That is a loaded question that takes a lot of time.
Okay. Well, we've got a few minutes anyway.
One thing that you would definitely look at is assisting the person in processing and really giving a voice or a truth to their experience.
Mm-hmm.
Handing the responsibility to where it belongs, to the perpetrator. Challenging that internalized shame that tends to occur. Redefining sex from trauma, pain, fear, shame, into this is my body now. This is a trusting, loving relationship in which I'm going to engage in sex. It is not this person touching me. It is the partner that I have chosen in love touching me. And so those are some of the steps that we would work through, mm-hmm. as well as really enhancing the empathy and communication with both partners so things aren't rushed.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked with people that have been abused by people in authority sometimes? A lot of cases you hear about now, people have been abused in the church by priests, et cetera. Have you encountered any of those situations where you've had to help people work through that?
Now, in my personal experience as a therapist, I have not worked with someone one-on-one that has experienced abuse by the hands of a priest.
Mm-hmm.
I have commonly heard of other people that are in power positions that have been abusers, such as coaches,
mm-hmm.
Sunday school teachers. And then we look at who has a most powerful position in our home, our parents.
Right.
Yeah, and they play a big role. So the stereotype of, you know, that's unfortunate that we think about priests, I haven't had that experience with, but I'm certain that it occurs. It occurs in all populations and all occupations, economics. I mean, throughout the ranks it occurs.
Right. Nobody is immune to possibly being abused, correct?
Unfortunately. I mean, what we do, we raise our kids and we teach them healthy touch, setting boundaries, what's safe and not safe. We supervise where our kids are and who they're with. Yet, just as nothing is guaranteed in our life, we can put all the parameters in that are healthy and safe, and it doesn't give you 100% guarantee.
Right. Right. My point being
that's depressing.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, I mean, it can happen with families that have a lot of money and people that don't have so much money.
That's what I talked about. It's all strata.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Just across the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, when people come to you, I've heard this as a piece of advice that what sex therapists will do is have people do certain exercises, maybe avoid intercourse until they work through some issues, maybe just certain exercises mm-hmm. where they become familiar with each other or go through different phases to reach a certain point where they can have successful intercourse, you know, pleasing intercourse again. Is that something you do? I mean,
sure.
Has that been your experience?
Well, sure. Just like if you were coming in and, let's say, had a healthy relationship and a good sex life, but you were coming in for anxiety, we would work through that anxiety and treatment, and then you would have goals and saying, this is what I'm going to work on this particular week to manage my anxiety. You know, that would be coping skills or behavioral actions or very light exposure to something you might be phobic about. So the same thing is true in intimate relationships. A very frequent and well-known homework or love play exercise is called Sensate Focus, and it is in four steps or stages. What it does is really help clients get the focus off of erections, focus off of intercourse, and back on sensations, relaxation, and connection. So an example in Sensate Focus Stage 1, you would have both parties lie nude in the bed. And I like the bed one because you have the privacy of your bedroom and you have space on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say person one is then the toucher and touches all over their partner's body with the exception of the genitals and arousal zone. So that would typically be the breast, genitals, and buttocks.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that for 15 minutes. And when you're the toucher, you think about, how do I want to touch my partner? Do I want to do it featherly light? Do I want to do it more like a intense massage? How does my partner's neck feel different than my partner's calf? And then when you're receiving, your focus is not to be, how does my body look? Am I supposed to be aroused? Will my partner want to have sex with me afterwards? No. We take all of that out, and that person is to think about, well, how does this touch feel to me? Do I like the lighter touch, the more intense touch? Do I like it more on my stomach than I hadn't used, you know, I hadn't noticed before? Do I really like when my partner's kind of massaging my scalp? So when you're the toucher, it's 15 minutes, and then you switch, and then the touchy turns into the toucher. And that goes down into four stages, as I talked about before, increasing sexual touch and behavior.
Mm-hmm. So when the person who is doing the touching, does the person that's being touched say, I really like that or that feels good? I mean, is it something as they go along?
In the future, we like that to be expressed. But during that moment, we like them to be quiet because we want them to be sensation focused. How is my body feeling right now? Now, a lot of people will say, oh, I did awful. We just laughed the whole time. That's fine. Because, again, we want sex to be playful and pleasurable.
Right. Relaxing.
Yeah, relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it shouldn't be a situation where you're feeling uptight and not enjoying the
mm-hmm.
act. That it's just all mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
There is some emotion, or there should be some emotion.
Yeah. So, again, when we look at Sensate, there's no need for an erection. I actually tell you, do not touch the genitals. Do not engage in sexual behavior. So all these notions of self-induced pressure or am I going to perform? What am I going to have to do? It's gone. And I'm looking at connecting to my partner and responding or paying attention to these sensations. So Sensate Focus is a pretty common recommendation that we would have for couples. Yet there's other things that are a lot of fun also. When we date and we're married for a long time, we lose a lot of spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
We lose a lot of playfulness. the dating part. And so homework assignments would be schedule a date. You're not allowed to talk about the kids or work.
Right.
Do something sexually spontaneous. So that could be as light as going to a store and buying some lingerie. Or, you know, as soon as your partner comes home and your kids aren't there, then you are ravenous with them. Looking at maybe sending a very complimentary text or a very sexual text. Putting love notes in your partner's socks. Mm-hmm. Writing a letter to them as to what it was that you fell in love with. Because we've got to keep that fun in there. We've got to keep some sense of spontaneity. Because the best lovers in the world can get boring.
Mm-hmm.
So that is about prioritizing our intimacy. So those are some of those examples. Another example of a homework assignment would be masturbation, particularly with someone that's reporting limited pleasure. So I would encourage them to explore pleasure in the privacy of their home.
Mm-hmm. Just to see what they like and don't like.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And also when they come in, we would talk about what messages did you give yourself? Did you think, this feels weird, my body doesn't look right, I don't deserve pleasure? And so we would work with that individual to change those thoughts that are more healthy. This is the only body that you're going to get.
Yeah, right. This time around, anyway.
Yeah, and so you're going to, that's right.
No.
And so you're going to decide, am I going to punish this body or am I going to give this body gifts? And we all deserve pleasure. And so Redefining that. You know, I work with so many women that have said, oh, I've put on 40 pounds. I just, you know, I've got the nightgown on every night. I just really don't want him to touch me. And I'll have the husband say, hey, it's a woman I fell in love with. I'm still interested.
Right.
So what I say is it's almost like you're choosing to have 4 10-pound bags of potatoes, like russet potatoes, right in the middle of your bed. And then you're going to tell your husband, these potatoes are going to be in charge of our sex life.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I use a lot of humor.
Right.
So you decide if that 40 pounds is worth the tension, the self-judgment, and limiting not only your pleasure, but the couple pleasure that you could be experiencing.
Right. Well, some people probably feel they don't deserve pleasure, right? Does that happen sometimes?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
How often do you work with gay and lesbian couples?
When I was in my town in Ohio, because I recently moved here about 6 months ago,
mm-hmm.
Part of my practice was about 30%, and I really enjoyed that. Our society doesn't tend to focus so much on when gay couples break up. Okay, you broke up. This is no different than a serious divorce mm-hmm. when you have long-term relationships.
Right.
And, you know, they have success rates that happen in straight couples in regards of working through divorce or working through their relationship conflicts that are leaving the D word on the table for them. And so I really enjoy working with gay couples, and I hope that we finally get a societal shift that we view that in the same vein as we do straight couples with marriage rights as well as the respect and understanding. When these relationships start, they're exciting and we need support of our peer group, and when they end, we need support and nurturance so we can move forward. So it was about 30% or so of my practice in Ohio. Right now I have been open in Northville, Michigan since October, and I only have about 10% of my practice, but I'm very interested in working with gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender individuals and couples.
Mm-hmm. So you feel that people should have a right to get married even if they're a gay couple? I mean, everybody that is in love with one another should have that option?
Well, again, what's normal sex? Adult, consensual, respectful.
Right.
What are rights? Human rights.
Right.
And I sit in this chair, and, you know, I think maintaining marriages, you know, and getting them healthy is a huge priority. Yet, do I want to put the stamp that people need to get married? I want people to have healthy, happy relationships, whether they have that stamp or not. But having a governmental body saying you can't have that marriage license, you can't take that next step, to me, that's just a human rights violation.
Right. Well, I know people think that everybody should be married to the opposite sex, but in a perfect world, that's not going to happen, and I don't see what the problem is.
Well, I would say a gay individual can have their perfect world right now.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. You know, Why shouldn't they be able to have their rights as well just because they love somebody? They're still going to get the same benefits, you know, that
And there's some good benefits, you know, right. There are some wonderful benefits. One is a health benefit is that we tend to live longer. Others is we have a kind of a societal respect that we receive and looking at having long-term commitments that are validated through marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are financial benefits as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to contact you, how could they do so?
Well, I have an office in Northville that is at 120 West Main Street. And my number is 734-788-8307. And right now I am accepting referrals and clients. I have a website if you'd like to find out a little bit more about me, and that is www.antontherapy.com, and Anton is A-N-T-O-N. You can contact me through my website or through my business phone. I also take a variety of, I'm on a variety of insurance panels,
mm-hmm.
and so that helps at least, you know, financially for some clients that want to come in, as well as fee for service.
Mm-hmm. So now, do you have a certain amount of people that you feel comfortable working with, or is it open to however many people contact you?
Well, I have office hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so
right. It's not 24 hours a day, right?
Not one bit. I have a life and also.
Yeah, very important.
I work on prioritizing. I have office hours, and I work to fit clients in with times that work best for them as well for me. Let's say that they need a 6 p.m., but I'm full for 6 p.m., then what I could do is see if we could do a lunch meeting, an early morning meeting, or give them a call when I do have a shift in my schedule. Another option is referring to another service provider.
Mm-hmm.
So I will take clients, and with my schedules full, and, you know, therapy is not a forever process. Typically,
right.
It's 7 to 12 sessions, and so there's always a rotation happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you work with people, do you ever leave the office and you can't leave it behind you at the office? You're thinking about it. Does that ever happen to you? Or are you able to divorce yourself from the work environment into your regular everyday life?
Well, part of our professional training is setting those boundaries. You know, that when you're out of that office, this is then your life. Yet in real life, it's sometimes difficult to do that. An easy example is you would think of a case that would come in that we'd be challenging, and you may mull over what interventions might work best for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say you're using interventions and outside of work, you may think, well, that really didn't work. What else can come to mind? So it's more treatment-oriented than stress or feeling overwhelmed or that type of stuff. It's more how can I assist the client in reaching their goals?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, what kind of referral needs to take place.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tiffany, thank you very much for doing the show. That's all the time we have for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking, but it was very interesting, and I know we just scratched the surface, so to speak, but thank you for doing the show. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. It's a pleasure.
I just want to thank my special guest for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Tiffany Anton. She is a therapist that specializes in sexual relationships. And I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out on this edition of the show. Be sure to come back next month. We'll be on again Tuesday, April 19th. So come back at that time for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Right now, I want to remind everybody that we are having another Festival of Enlightenment here at Henry Ford Community College. That will be Saturday, March 26th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and it will be held in the Student and Culinary Arts Center. There will be our usual array of fantastic vendors, psychic readers, and body healers. In addition, we have some exciting and excellent speakers, along with acoustic music in our cafe area. All of this is included with the admission price of only $5. And as a special offer, any student with current school ID will be admitted free. Please come and join us for this celebration of life and spirit. Once again, that's the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, March 26th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Henry Ford Community College. We hope to see you there at the fair. And if you enjoyed this edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Just remember that Tiffany Anton will be one of the speakers at this festival. She's scheduled for 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and have a great day.